my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey everyone, it is episode 189 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and 2 weeks in a row, Chad Smart joining, and not only joining this week, but joining in person as, well, person with me, not with you, you're listening to this, but he is sitting beside me right now on my couch. Chad, it is great to see you again, man.
Thanks for having me back for a second episode, and thanks for letting me crash on your couch at 6:30 this morning.
Yeah, Chad traveling in to Southern Illinois late and into the early morning hours, and I guess we haven't seen each other in person since 2017's Money in the Bank, and that was just very brief. And then before that, you came into town for a Stride Pro Wrestling show, so it seems like a lot of your travel revolves around wrestling or hockey these days.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the only thing I travel for is sports. So we've got 3 hockey trips left for the next season. You and I are still discussing whether or not WrestleMania 35. Well, I guess it will be 35. So I
mean, it's in New Jersey again,
right? It's in New Jersey. Yeah. You know, we've been there before.
Yeah.
My hesitation is just getting around from place to place in New York, because I believe Hall of Fame, NXT, all of that will be at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, the arena, the stadium, football stadium that WrestleMania will be at is in New Jersey, which is not easy unless they have changed in the, 8, 6, 7 years since we've been there. Mm-hmm. Unless they've added some public transportation that goes out there. It wasn't an easy venue to – it was easy to get to. It wasn't easy to get back from.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of chaotic. And a lot of times it is, but some of the cities – I think Houston stands out as one of the better cities as far as getting out. And it was in a semi-quick manner when we left.
But they had a light rail system that ran right from downtown where we were down to the stadium.
Yeah.
And Atlanta was good because we were within walking distance.
We walked everywhere. I think Atlanta probably, was probably the most user-friendly in that regard, because we did walk to a lot of places. But now, you know, of course, was Uber a thing when we were in New Jersey? That was in 2013.
I don't think so. That's a good point. No, because we took a taxi there.
That's,
and then we had
I
to
thought.
Pull a call a taxi to get out, which I'm sure Uber would be easier to get out. There's just, I don't like using Ubers right after an event.
Yeah.
One, due to surge pricing, and two, when you have 60,000 people trying to all get an Uber, it's not the most convenient. And then there's really, I don't think, any place to walk away from the crowd.
Right.
To call an Uber.
Yeah. It does get pretty chaotic. But yeah, we're thinking about that. And you talk about hockey. Of course, you and your buddy Mike DeKalb, who is the hockey transplant, that is his blog. He's a regular on Positive Cynicism, which is also here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. You guys do Wonder Why. Mm-hmm. And your most recent episode, you put a new poll out, and people can go, how can people get involved and vote? Because you try to make this as interactive as possible, and your listeners kind of weigh in on what song or what artist you're going to kind of dissect in the next month's episode.
Yeah, so the polls can always be found on Twitter, at Chad Smart. I usually pin them to the top of my Twitter. We're in the process of getting the PositiveCynicism.com website up and running. Once that's going, we'll put everything there. Facebook page doesn't usually have the poll, mainly because Facebook only allows you 2 options for polls, and we always go with 3 options. But you can check it out on Twitter. By the time you're hearing this one, probably the poll will either be in its last few hours, the current poll, anyway, or it'll be closing. But we do it every month. And you know, even if you just have a suggestion for a topic for Positive Cynicism, hit me a line. on Twitter. And yeah,
we'll have to do a Wonder Why on wrestling album songs from the first two wrestling albums, Pile Driver and the wrestling album. Could those be considered one hit wonders? Did you listen to any of the wrestling albums?
I had the wrestling albums.
Okay, okay.
You know, I remember the Pile Driver video.
Yeah.
I remember, it's not Tutti Frutti. I don't know. I mean, Gene did.
He did do Tutti Frutti, yeah.
But I was trying to think of the Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
I'm thinking of, yes. Yeah. And Strike Force Girls in Cars. Or,
yep. Gosh. We just took a ride 30 years into history here. We are doing an episode, if you read the title of this, you obviously know, a Wrestling Under the Influence, which I got to admit to you, my wife was in Wisconsin a few weeks ago and brought back some beer, and it's called Fantasy something, and I've actually got it in my beer fridge, and she bought it actually with the intent of doing a podcast. Well, I brought this idea up kind of last minute, and for the fantasy one, I want to do it as a fantasy booker type scenario. If you're new to Wrestling Under the Influence, we pick a beer out, we drink the beer, we rate the beer, and we tie it in with something involved in professional wrestling. So this time around, Chad and I actually went to the liquor store. We looked around, and we found some good ideas. We found some good potential talkers. But what we settled on is Anti-Hero. It is an Indian Pale Ale made by Revolution Brewing. And Revolution Brewing is in Chicago. I've had some of their stuff before. I believe I've had Anti-Hero, and I'm not a huge IPA guy. But the ABV, rather, alcohol by volume, is 6.7%. The bitterness level, 65 IBUs, which isn't bad for an IPA. So you are kind of a novice when it comes to drinking. Is that right, though? At least craft beers or things outside of the typical liquors.
Yes, I have no idea. I know what alcohol by volume.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what a IBUS is. I don't know what IPA is. I just pick a beer. If I'm drinking it, I look at the label.
Mm-hmm.
I find the name. I was like, that one sounds cool. And I'm either surprised or disgusted.
Right. And so just a quick catch you up here. IPA is an Indian Pale Ale. And if you look at this can, you see the general or whatever he is here. His face looks funny, and those little parachute things, those are hops. Hops are what makes beer bitter. So an IBU is an International Bitterness Unit. I think that's the acronym. So 65 is kind of high, but I've had some that are up in the 80s, which are really bitter. But I used to be kind of the same way. I would pick a beer based on the logo, the label, not knowing what an IPA was. And a lot of the beers that and that's kind of what gave me a misconception of craft beer was I picked a lot of IPAs for whatever reason. And I'm like, I don't like these. Why do I keep drinking them? But you know, I'm learning more about it. And then this has been fun. This is the third episode of Wrestling Under the Influence. Go back in the archives, check out Death by Coconut. It's a fun look at the Rowdy Roddy Piper, Piper's Pit with Jimmy Snuka, where he smashes him with a coconut. And then, of course, the last one I did with Dan Turnquist, that first one I did with my buddy Tom Harness from Craft Beerkins, but Dan Turnquist and I did one. He's with Stride Pro Wrestling. We talked about Brothers 22 anniversary, and we looked at some of our favorite brothers, both real and storyline brothers throughout the years. But with Anti-Hero, we kind of talked about it at the liquor store, which we got this at Speakeasy, about $10 for a six-pack. And we talked about some Anti-Heroes and kind of the evolution, since this is by Revolution, kind of the evolution, though, of the hero from when you and I started watching wrestling, when it was when it was Hulk Hogan and Dusty Rhodes and Sting. Those were your standard cookie cutter baby faces, to how it has evolved to Stone Cold Steve Austin's and The Rock, and even nowadays with Roman Reigns, who I think you could label as an anti-hero.
Well, I think so. And I think the one that I did not think of until I was just reading this label and you missed this, as you said, is a beer that is brewed in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago is probably home to one of the biggest anti-heroes, yeah, who would not be down with this episode due to the alcohol content.
Right.
But that would be Mr. Don't Call Me CM Punk Anymore, I Hate Wrestling.
Yeah. which I actually thought of Punk too when I saw this, thinking anti-hero, because wasn't that kind of his premise or gimmick at one point? Like, he was kind of the anti-hero. I don't remember.
I know he was, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But was that gimmick or was that real life? I mean, that may have been a shoot. So obviously when we were kids, you know, it was Hulkamania. We talked about this a little bit last week on Your Sixth Sense. One of my favorite storylines in wrestling was the face turn of Rowdy Roddy Piper, and how, you know, when we were kids, Hogan, it was Hulk Rules. And over on the NWA side of things, it was Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors. Those guys were, you know, you knew wrestling was very well defined by good guys and bad guys. But then somewhere along the way, and I guess you could argue it was the Attitude Era, mm-hmm. where that line blurred, and you've got a guy like Steve Austin who is flipping off the boss and flipping off the fans, flipping off his opponents, drinking beer in the ring, but he's getting cheered. And he's not your typical, and he never wanted to quote unquote be called a hero. And I think Piper even kind of fell into that category after he turned good as well.
Yeah, I mean, you look back at Hulkamania and that era, and that time too, everything was, you know, you had the Cold War going on, so everything was very pro-America. You had defined good and bad in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through the 90s, you look at the evolution of grunge music, everything that was going on in the world, the Iraq War, and somewhere along the line between good and bad started getting blurred more in just in reality. And so, yeah, then you have Stone Cold come around, and, you know, Stone Cold was the anti-hero because his actions were not honorable, you could say.
Right.
But he was taking out the frustration that every worker probably has. Had Austin just been feuding with The Rock, or I'm trying to think who else was around at the time, Mick Foley, you know, if it would have been kind of a Hogan Piper wrestler versus wrestler situation, Austin may not have been the anti-hero that he became. But because you interject Vince McMahon coming off the Montreal Screwjob,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, now Vince is the evil corporate overlord.
Right.
And he's trying to stop Austin from, you know, achieving success and stopping the fans from seeing the guy that they want to see. You get that anti-hero because the fans want to see Austin, but the man is keeping him down.
So would you define an anti-hero in terms of pro wrestling as that good guy who has the bad guy qualities? Like we talked about, you know, things that a typical everyday Johnny Punch Card kind of guy would not be able to get away with that Austin got away with, for example. I mean, he's kind of the one that we keep going back to, but we also talked about CM Punk. So what quantifies him as an anti-hero of sorts?
Yeah, I think it's those people who don't really care about the rules. They're mm-hmm. going, I mean, they have their own code of ethics, mm-hmm. which is to them, you know, loyalty to friends or not taking, you know, static from anyone, just being true to themselves. And their methods may be a little less than honorable, but at least you know where they stand. They're very upfront about it. Unlike, I'm trying to think of a good example in the wrestling world, someone who would claim to have your back, but then is ratting you out to the person or trying to backstab you.
So in today's product, and I know, admittedly, we probably don't watch as much as we, you know, as people who are involved with wrestling podcasts and blogs and whatnot should probably watch, is Roman Reigns an anti-hero? Who do you see on today's current stage, whether it's WWE, Chikara Pro, ROH, Impact, whatever flavor you're getting your wrestling from? Who are some anti-heroes that come to mind for you?
Well, I think in the WWE sense, a lot of the faces are, I don't know if you call them anti-heroes, but they possess a lot of traits of bad guys, really, of heels. Like, they will, you know, I remember back when, and this is dating myself because this is probably way more years than I want to admit, but when Sheamus was the good guy feuding with Alberto Del Rio,
mm-hmm.
and Sheamus stole
Del
Rio's car. That's not a sign of a good guy. That's what a heel would do to get bad. But because it's Sheamus, the fans were into it. I'm trying to think of...
But even if you go back, you know, we talked about Hulk Hogan. You know, he was the personification of America's hero. But as Jesse Ventura would always point out, and Vince McMahon on commentary was always quick to avoid or Gorilla Monsoon, whoever was in the booth with him, you know, Hogan raked his opponent's eyes. Mm-hmm. He scratched him on the back. He choked him on, you know, he did these heelish things, if you will. But when you're doing them to Bobby Heenan or Paul Orndorff or Rowdy Roddy Piper at that time period, it seemed to be more acceptable. You could kind of get away with it. And it kind of goes, too, with the CM Punk situation that we talked about. You know, when CM Punk was straight edge and kind of called out Jeff Hardy, for example, you know, Jeff Hardy was breaking the law with what he was doing, but he was the good guy. And Punk pointing these things out suddenly became the bad guy or the anti-hero, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the whole better than you, because even with calling out Jeff Hardy, he's calling out the fans as well, who probably have similar habits or hobbies to Jeff Hardy. And especially when it comes to alcohol and drinking and saying, you know, I'm straight edge, I don't put poison into my body. If you're the guy sitting in the fourth row, two-fisting at night, you're like, I don't like this guy. He's a jerk for, you know, calling me out on my alcoholism.
So let's pop the top here. By the way, this show is not sponsored by Anti-Hero or Revolutionary Brewing. Cheers.
And drink responsibly.
Absolutely. Definitely. Whoa, man. The bitterness does kind of punch you in the nose, so to speak, I think. Pretty bitter.
I don't have really a frame of reference, so it just tastes like beer to me.
Yeah, Chad's just going to join us for the drinking part of it.
Yeah.
And probably not do much of an analysis. Now, the first sip, the first drink is very hoppy. The second drink, it lingers on the palate. You still have that hoppiness, that bitterness to it, but it becomes a little more tolerable. Again, if you're not an IPA person, if you're not into the bitter or the hoppiness of some beers, you're probably not going to like this. I would probably, and I haven't come up with a clever, creative rating system. Maybe an Oh Hell Yeah or a Slam It. I don't know. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. I would probably exchange this, though, for, you know, send it into the ropes and get something different, I think.
Yeah, I think this would definitely be a toss over the top rope to the outside.
There you go.
Battle Royal move. It's not bad, but... I will probably have one of these and then would move on to something else.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It's, again, it is by Revolution Brewing, based in Chicago. And they do have a very good selection of different types of beers. Their artwork, as I mentioned, is pretty amazing. And we, you know, kind of were drawn to that at the liquor store. But they have a whole hero series of beer, including Galaxy Hero, Tropic Hero, Citra Hero, and Denali Hero. And again, I think most of their beers, or at least most of their hero beers, are the hoppiness, because all of the artwork depicts the hops and whatnot. So, you know, they have a Coffee Eugene. We could have found that and talked about Eugene, I guess. But I kind of like the discussion on the anti-hero, because let's kind of get back to the wrestling side of this. You know, obviously there is a connection, and there always kind of has been a connection, I think, of drinking beer and machismo and whatnot when it comes to professional wrestling. You know, when Dusty Rhodes back in the day would cut that promo and talk about, you know, being the American dream and the all-American man and the worker. And you know, he was Johnny Sixpack personified. He did not look like your typical wrestler, especially when you were watching WWE. You compare the good guys that you saw in WWF back then. You know, you had Hulk Hogan. You had Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff when he turned babyface. You had Superfly Jimmy Snuka. All these guys were kind of ripped. And then over here on NWA, I'm looking at Dusty Rhodes. And that is kind of telling too, I think. And I'm kind of going off on a whole nother tangent here, but he was one of those heroes that didn't necessarily look the part, but definitely talked the part and could back it up in the ring, I think.
Yeah, Dusty obviously did not, and I got to stop starting every sentence off with, yeah, but Dusty did not look the part of a wrestler,
mm-hmm.
especially if your introduction is from WWF.
Right.
However, I think that's what appealed Dusty to the Everyman, because, and even in the same way, you know, we were talking about Stone Cold earlier, Austin, especially after his neck injury, did lose some definition
mm-hmm.
in his body, but it didn't matter to the fans because no one, I think, especially if you look at it now, people don't want the guy with the six pack abs and the, yeah, it's nice. And I'm sure those guys still get attention because of the look, but
Heath Hatton, your abs are cool, man. we still love you. He's not listening, but you're making a good point here.
I don't really know what that point was, but other than Dusty Rhodes appealed to the commoner, the man who had, you know, eaten pork and beans and dined with kings and queens, although most people probably have not dined with kings and queens, but you could see yourself in Dusty.
Right.
And then on the flip side, you look at the heels, you know, Roddy Piper was just the smart aleck trouble, the Eddie Haskell, if mm-hmm. you will, of WWF, whereas Ric Flair was the style and profile. He was, and I hate to really make this comparison, and I'm going to be drinking more after I say it, he was the Kardashian of the NWA.
That's good. I like that.
He was the one that everyone wanted to keep up with, and few could.
Right.
And if he were here right now, he would already have these other four beers down before mm-hmm. we finish our ones.
That is true. That is true. So that's a very valid point. You know, just the difference in the 80s and even into the 90s, and once, you know, both companies obviously evolved and changed things up, but, you know, another anti-hero, if you will, on a different extreme would be Sergeant Slaughter, who, you know, his gimmick when he was the, you know, retired Marine Corps guy, early on, Sarge was a bad guy. Then they turned him good. Of course, the thing happened with G.I. Joe. He was feuding with Nikolai Volkoff, the Iron Sheik. Moved on, went to the AWA for a little bit, and then finally came back around. And when he came back to the WWF in the summer of 1990, of course, this country was, you know, engaging in some military exercises in the Middle East with Kuwait and the threat of Saddam Hussein and Iraq. And, you know, it brought to me, and maybe part of it was because we were growing up, and, you know, by this point I was entering my senior year of high school, but I was more aware of the world around us. And when we were kids, we knew about Russia and the Cold War, and, you know, Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik played that part very well. But to see an Iraqi sympathizer, you know, a former American hero, turn his back on his country and embrace that lifestyle, and, you know, I liked 1984, 1985 Sergeant Slaughter, but by 90, 91, I think he was slightly past his prime, and this isn't a slam against him. It was an interesting choice. It was a ballsy choice. It was a risky choice going with him for a number of reasons, I think his age being one of them, but also, you know, we talk about how wrestling has emulated or adjusted to real life, and that's obviously what Vince McMahon was doing back in 1990 when he put Sergeant Slaughter in that role, and then, of course, made him the champion, and then, of course, Hogan rolls along at WrestleMania 7 and saves the day, and you know, all is right once again in the World Wrestling Federation. So I don't know that I have a point here. I'm just kind of rambling, and it's not the beer talking, but it's just another one of those instances where you had that hero who then quickly became the bad guy who people couldn't trust anymore. And we've obviously seen plenty of heel turns throughout the years where, and it seemed like, again, I'm going back to Hogan and Dusty, you know, in the NWA, it was the Road Warriors, it was Barry Windham, it was Ronnie Garvin, all these guys turning their back on Dusty Rhodes. I think Magnum TA, had he not been injured in that car crash, may have eventually been one of those guys too. And then, of course, WWF, it was Andre. It was Paul Orndorff. It was Macho Man Randy Savage. You know, these good guys, larger-than-life personalities, but they can't seem to keep friends.
Yeah, you would know nothing about that. But I just want to say, if my math is correct, in 1991, when Sergeant Slaughter was the focus, the champion, 43 years old.
Was he really?
AJ Styles, current champion, 40 years old.
Yeah.
So, but I also think times have changed, like you said, where guys are older per se when they hit their stride in wrestling, whereas mm-hmm. before it was. I mean, you can go back to when WCW started up Nitro and the Billionaire's Ted skits that Vince mm-hmm. McMahon was making fun of Hogan and Savage for being old. And now, look, we're getting Triple H and Undertaker at the biggest show in Australia.
Oh, really? Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's their final, the last time they'll face each other. Until the next big show when they need to sell tickets.
I was going to say, is that a promise? I knew they were going to Australia. I did not know they were that match had been announced. But that's another, you know, the Undertaker, I think, maybe another one of those guys that kind of fits into that anti-hero role too, because, you know, I think we've talked about the Undertaker briefly on this podcast before. I know I've talked about him on the blog, but in 1990, when he debuted at Survivor Series, he was kind of, looking back at it from even back then, though, I kind of thought it, but even especially today, it was another one of those cheesy, cartoonish kind of gimmicks. It's the same night that the Gobbledygooker appeared. Mm-hmm. Of course, Undertaker was presented and packaged much differently and dominated that elimination match and got counted out after pinning Dusty Rhodes. Again, we're back to Dusty and Coco Beware. But, you know, 28 years later, it'll be 28 years in November, would you have ever thought back then? I mean, again, I was a senior in high school. You were a junior in high school. I would never have thought nearly 30 years down the road we would still be talking about this guy. Not only talking about him, but still seeing him on a, I'm doing air quote here, active basis. But he really has stood the test of time, and he's evolved, and he's been that. You know, who would have ever thought, too, that a guy that's putting other opponents in body bags and coffins is being cheered and becomes that hero of sorts for the fans?
Yeah, and I think there's a quote in comic book lore that says, if you live long enough, every hero becomes a villain. Mm-hmm. I think in wrestling, it's the opposite. If you stick around long enough, every villain becomes a hero.
Yeah.
Because you look at now when WWF brings back older stars, it doesn't matter who they are, they're always cheered,
right?
Out of, I guess, a respectfulness. But you can take the biggest heel, you know, Ted DiBiase, for example, and he's going to get cheered, and he's going to act like a face now on TV.
Yeah.
Whereas, so the Undertaker going, I think, throughout his career, as you said, he's evolved, and it just came to that point where the fans. Another factor with wrestling is if you are good and you're around long enough, the fans will actually start to appreciate that more and then will cheer you anyway. So in that regard, there is hope for Roman Reigns that someday the fans may actually cheer him.
What do you think, and I don't know that we've ever talked about this, what is it about Roman Reigns? Is it that the WWE is so insistent on making him the guy? Why are people okay with him in the Shield, but when he's on his own, they seem to boo him and aren't embracing him? And why? What is it about him that WWE seemingly has not? Again, this is fan reaction. This is not any insider perspective, obviously. But they've never, seemingly, have never really kind of changed the course with him. Mm-hmm. And there have been others. You know, you can't tell me that Bobby Lashley, for example, who I would be my personal pick right now to be the one to beat Brock Lesnar. There are other options. Braun Strowman, who another anti-hero of sorts. But what is it about Roman that has not resonated or that WWE is insistent on keeping him in there? And I am not an anti-Roman Reigns guy, but clearly this experiment is still 4 years later, 3 years later, not working.
Well, I will take it there are several different points that I'll try to make a point with, and I don't know if either if any of them are legitimate or it's just speculation.
Sure.
One, Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Even though he was out injured and could not medically compete,
mm-hmm.
the fans didn't want to accept that. You know, they wanted, and then
that was evidence. Rey Mysterio learned that the hard way. Yes.
So Roman Reigns comes in after Daniel Bryan is kind of on the outs. The fans don't have the time to, I guess, accept Daniel Bryan no longer being there. And the next person, whoever it's going to be, is going to get booed because it's even, I think even if AJ Styles had come in at that time, there would have been a bit of a backlash against him, given just because they wanted Daniel Bryan.
Do you think it hurt Roman Reigns that he was not a quote-unquote indie darling like his counterparts in The Shield, for example, yes. or like Daniel Bryan too? I mean, I think there's kind of a perception that he's a tailor-made man. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in that Samoan family. He's The Rock's cousin. And they've played that up on TV mm-hmm. that, you know, maybe he's getting this reception because he hasn't, you know, again, air quotes here, paid his dues.
He didn't. Yeah, I think that's also, and I hadn't thought about that, but that's another good point, is that fans didn't know who he was before he showed up in The Shield.
Right.
Because at the time, NXT was not on the network. You know, the
right.
network.
Sure.
So Seth Rollins, you know, we have the classic story of not getting a photo with him at WrestleMania 26 because I said, he'll never go on to anything beyond
yes.
Ring of Honor.
But we got Cassius Ohno.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm not a talent scout.
Speaking of heroes, Chris Hero. Yes, yes.
And Jon Moxley, you know, Dean Ambrose.
Yeah.
These guys had cut their teeth on the indie circuit. They knew who they were. And that's why you see, like, when they break The Shield up, Seth Rollins gets, you know, a good fan reaction. Dean Ambrose gets a good reaction. I think Roman is hurt by the Daniel Bryan aspect. Like you said, he's the guy that WWE just said, okay, you have the look, you have the heritage. It's kind of in the same way, kind of like Nia Jax, who I think is a better, I don't want to say better wrestler, but she evolved better than Roman Reigns did when she came in. But the fact that she is The Rock's cousin and that's been played up, it's like, is she only getting that role because WWE, and you know, you look at how much The Rock has been involved in the last 6 years as opposed to the 6-7 years before that, is there a correlation between trying to keep him happy by pushing his family, or
it may be a double-edged sword, you know, because The Rock obviously top five for sure, maybe even smaller number than that, most popular all-time superstars in WWE and in all of wrestling. One of my favorites for sure, but do the fans resent that? Is WWE insulting the fans' intelligence by us not thinking that we're not onto their plan that just because he's The Rock's cousin, then that automatically means I'm going to cheer him or I'm going to like him? And they're trying to use the rub of The Rock on Nia Jax and on Roman Reigns, for example. Because I don't ever remember the play up of a super, like, I feel like WWE has thrown everything behind Roman Reigns humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, it's just not sticking.
And I think that's the next point is when the fans have said, we don't want him. And I think it's, I don't think there isn't a chance for Roman Reigns. I just think everything, like you said, that has happened with Roman Reigns has been not the way that the fans want it.
Uh-huh.
And so their displeasure is saying, we don't want this guy, and WWE saying, yes, you do, and we're going to give it to you.
Yeah.
So you get the fan backlash there. I also think right now it's just the cool thing to do to
yeah.
hate on Roman Reigns.
Right.
And so how much of the reaction – the Roman Reigns reaction is like a Twitter reaction where you have a vocal minority speaking up the loudest, but do they actually reflect the general – overall population.
Yeah, and it would be interesting, and obviously we didn't this whole topic, we've just kind of been drinking and spurring a conversation here. I will say about the alcohol, the beer with the higher ABVs, they do work faster, obviously. So, but you know, John Cena would be another classic example here. How would you compare the John Cena story, especially, and obviously the last probably, 18 months, 2 years, mm-hmm. Cena has had a much less significant role in the company. He is kind of transitioning and obviously doing the Hollywood thing, which good for him. I'm happy. And I do like to see when superstars succeed and make it into the other side, if you will. The Rock, of course, being the greatest example of that. I think Cena is making a mark for himself too, but you know, there was a pocket of time there when, you know, it was kind of like you said, the cool thing to do, to boo John Cena, mm-hmm. to hate John Cena. You had the crowds doing the "We want Cena sucks" chants, mm-hmm. and he embraced it. And I don't know if that's the difference between he and Roman Reigns. I legitimately don't think Cena cared, mm-hmm. Or at least he didn't show that it cared. And Cena was also that guy, and probably still is that guy, who I could see going on the Today Show or on Kelly and Ryan or whatever show you want to put out there. He looks the part of that corporate mouthpiece, that spokesman, if you will. Roman Reigns, I don't get that vibe. There's really no one that comes to mind on the current roster, if you want to talk about that crossover appeal, that I look at and say he would be a good representative, you know, put him on this show or this show or this show. The Miz, I think, does a pretty good job of it, but he's still kind of missing that step to the next level. But back to John Cena, I mean, he's obviously been that guy who has been the top dog, sorry, Roman, for a very long time. And I think a lot of fans kind of still perceive him in that role, even though now he's more of an attraction, kind of falling the way of The Undertaker mm-hmm. and, to an extent, Kane.
Yeah, stupid, yes. But when I was watching Money in the Bank, it dawned on me that Cena hadn't been around in a while. And I don't watch Raw or SmackDown as much as I used to, so I hadn't even really thought that Cena is gone. Mm-hmm. Now, to compare him and Reigns, Cena started out as kind of, you know, bland baby face, and then he had got the Vanilla Ice dress up at the SmackDown Halloween show. That kind of took over, and you know, then he started doing the rapping career, which got over with fans, as we were saying. Even though he was a heel,
right?
It was a cool enough gimmick that the fans embraced it.
Yeah,
and I think that helped build him up because he didn't just go from, you know, showing up one week as a jabroni basically to heavyweight champion. There was a good 2-3 years of working his way up,
right?
And so the fans had time to embrace him. And then, yes, after like 4 or 5 years of him always being on top and, you know, the spoiler alert, Cena wins
right.
type aspect where there was no drama, that's when I think the fans turn. And yes, you made a good point. Cena takes it and plays off of it mm-hmm. to show one personality and two, just like engage the audience with it.
Yeah.
When the fans started turning on Roman, he didn't know how to react. And his reactions were kind of just like, going back to Punk, it's more of like, I'm better than you. Why do you boo me? You came to see, like, yeah. more condescending.
Yeah.
And so I think that turns fans off as well.
Yeah. His, you know, and sometimes it becomes a slippery slope, I think, for a lot of these men and women, because they are put in situations from time to time where, you know, the audience reaction may not be what the writers are anticipating. And I think that you have to be, and part of it, I would imagine, too, is the worry, the concern that you're going to piss off Vince McMahon or piss off whomever is writing that script or whatever if you go off that script or if you tweak it and accommodate the fan reaction. You know, a lot of times I think whomever the talent is, they are going to stay the course and they're not going to deviate. Whereas John Cena, and of course John Cena has a lot of latitude because of who he is, but, you know, could Cesaro or could Dolph Ziggler, you know, those guys that are kind of in that upper middle card, would they be able to deviate from the quote-unquote script like a John Cena would be able to and get away with it? Because the talent is obviously there, but you know, that comes in with Roman Reigns. That's not necessarily a skill that you can teach someone. Sometimes it's a little bit of more of an innate inner personality thing that John Cena is a natural. The Rock is a natural. Roman Reigns, I think, you know, I don't want to hate on the guy. I think he's the strong, silent type. And, I'd almost rather see him as the bad guy with a mouthpiece. And, you know, it doesn't have to be Paul Heyman, but, there's other talent out there that could be developed into that kind of managerial role as well. But that's a whole nother, I guess, side tangent.
And that's where I think you asked earlier, why do fans like Roman when he's with the Shield, but not alone? Because in the Shield, he is just the silent ass kicker.
Yeah.
And he plays up to that strength well.
Yeah.
The other aspect with Roman, if I can remember what I was just thinking, is he's not as flashy as a Seth Rollins or a Dean Ambrose. He's very paint by numbers, very basic, and all WWE wrestlers have their four moves of doom that they work into every match. For me, it just seems Roman only has those four moves. He doesn't know how to do anything in between those moves. So you're going to get the drive-by apron dropkick. You're going to get the Superman punch. You're going to get 20,000 spears each match. Like, his matches are just very bland. And I don't know if other fans see that as well.
Mm-hmm.
As thing. Whereas, you know, you look at Seth Rollins, who can go out and have a 30-minute match on Raw and be very engaging and have it be kind of a back-and-forth thing. Roman just doesn't have that skill set.
Yeah. Well, as we kind of start wrapping things up, I do want to mention Stride Pro Wrestling, and one of the anti-heroes there, at least in my 1-2-3 sense, would be Axe Allward, who was a guy for years, biggest villain, you know, the company had seen, biggest villain in indie wrestling in Southern Illinois specifically, but, you know, now he's kind of taken to listening to the cheers of the fans, and he hasn't really changed his ways at all. You know, he kind of reminds me kind of Piper, Rowdy Roddy Piper-esque, in that he's kind of still doing the same thing. He's just focusing his attention on more of the people who have done him wrong, and those people happen to be bad guys. So a shout out to Axe Allward and Stride Pro Wrestling, which, by the way, returns on Saturday, August 4th. And you've met Axe before. You've seen Axe in action. And I don't know that you've seen him since he's turned good and won the tag team championships with Heath Hatton, but you know that is kind of I guess if I were to pick an anti-hero in Stride, it would definitely have to be Axe Allward.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of Axe.
Yeah, we watched him long time ago.
Yeah, what a way to feel old, Axe. you know, but what made Axe stand out, obviously, Gaylord.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think Axe does have the talent on his own from what I have seen. I'm racking my brain over because I've only seen one live Stride Pro Wrestling show, and that was a year ago, so I'm sure things have changed.
Yeah.
I don't think Tony Flood has become the hero part of the anti-hero yet.
Yeah.
But I think he's one that, kind of like in a Piper situation, where if played right, when he does turn face, could be huge.
Yeah.
Or your good buddy Roger.
I don't know about that. I don't know that he would be definitely anti. I don't know about the hero part
though. I just hope either the next show or an upcoming show, whenever he's wrestling, when you're introducing him, he just comes up to you and asks you what's the capital of Thailand.
No. Well, speaking of Roger, you know, obviously Cash Borden has been a thorn in his side, and Cash would be another one of those guys I could kind of see in that anti-hero role as well. He is not your typical cookie-cutter baby face where he's, shaking hands and kissing babies, so to speak. He has kind of a more rugged look and, you know, has been in some of those hardcore and pretty intense matches, but the fans love him. They have embraced him here in Stride Pro Wrestling for sure. So that's just a few of our anti-heroes. If you have any anti-heroes, let us know. Head over to the My123Cents Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram pages. You can weigh in there, of course, here on Jittery Monkey. Check out the other shows, including Chad's Positive Cynicism. What are you working on for the next? You're still working on some show ideas, but you've got, of course, Wonder Why, which is a monthly feature. And the one I'm looking forward to listening to more of is your summer
Summer Blockbuster Evolution.
Thank you.
Which we still have to come up with an actual title for that series, but hopefully that will start in July and go probably a good 3 or 4 months because there's just so much information that we're researching and trying to figure out how to condense into a hour long or 90-minute episode, monthly episode.
Yeah.
And then I have the question everything every third week, or every third week of the month is question everything, where I try to bring people on who I think need some exposure. You know, it's either a podcast host that I listen to or someone who is doing good in the world, because one of the focuses of positive cynicism is to spread positivity and, you know, try to take all the hate that's going on in the world and push it aside and make the world a better place.
I definitely love the message and what you're doing there. Greg Mahochko, by the way, the co-founder of this network here, the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, he has Nerds United, and the odds of Kevin Smith listening to this, I know, slim to none. Greg really wants to have Kevin Smith on episode 100, which is happening very soon. It's the next episode. So if anyone knows Kevin Smith, tweet him. Let him know that Greg wants to talk to him. It'll be a great conversation. And, of course, Greg also has the Five Hearts podcast, not the Five Beating Hearts or the Bleeding Hearts or whatever.
The Five Heartbeats.
The Five Heartbeats, whatever Chad screws up that title on positive cynicism. And then our friends, of course, Tom and Jim over at Tom and Jim's Top 5, the Skull Brothers, Tom and Jason Skull, at the Skullbuster WrestleCast, and some new friends. The fellows over at Ring Generals Radio, who are orchestrating, organizing the Battle Bowl tournament, and Chad and I are both participants this year and looking forward to our opening round matches. Check out Ring Generals Radio. They're going to be recording some upcoming shows with the tournament, and I'm looking forward to being a part of that. And Jason Skull, I'm coming after your belt, brother. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. The whole podcasting experience has opened us up to some new friends. Of course, there's also our buddies over at Podzilla 1985. They have multiple shows over there, so just check out Podzilla 1985 and stay up to date. Of course, StrideProWrestling.com. We'll link you to the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. And whatever else may be on your mind, let us know. How can we make this show better? What do you want to hear? Suggest a beer for an upcoming wrestling under the influence. And give us a review over at iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. So iTunes, 4 stars, 1 star, whatever's on your mind, let us know. And as always, have a great week. And as Chad always says, do something positive and question everything.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.